This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Anita Rao. For students and educators around North Carolina, this year's learning is in a state of flux. Public schools are holding out hope that they'll open their doors again before the school year ends. Meanwhile, colleges and universities are looking ahead to the summer and even fall and realizing that the COVID-19 pandemic has reached well beyond the academic year. These changes and the surrounding uncertainty are affecting everyone and everything, from individual students to system-wide budgets. Liz Schlemmer is WUNC's education reporter, and she joins me now for an update. Welcome, Liz.
Hi, Anita. Glad to be here.
So you've been spending the past few weeks really diving into the impact of the coronavirus pandemic on all aspects of education and learning. And I'd love to start really thinking about something that kind of comes before students are even able to learn, the ability to eat and be well fed so they can concentrate on their studies. And this has really been a challenge as students have moved away from the school environment. Is that right?
Right. School meals are so important for students. And there are some schools where a majority of their students rely on free or reduced price lunch and breakfast and snacks. And so one thing that a lot of schools did right off the bat, as soon as Governor Cooper made the stay-at-home orders or asked for schools to move to online classes, on day one, many schools across the state were moving to delivering meals to students, whether at community sites or at drop-off sites at certain schools. Some school districts were even delivering meals on students' own bus routes, bringing it directly to them, coming right to their door. And that's continued across the state throughout this time. We did see at Durham Public Schools last week that they decided to at least temporarily stop those meal services on a daily basis run by school workers.
Right. So someone tested positive for COVID-19 and they decided, you know, it was time to maybe not put these people at risk. And it was a big challenge for them to keep that service going. So they decided to kind of come up with a new partnership to take its place. And that's being rolled out this week. Tell us about that.
Right. So the Durham Public Schools, along with the Durham Public School Foundation, that's a local nonprofit that supports the school district, and some other partnerships with restaurants are going to work to fill some of that gap. I was at a Durham Public School middle school last week on their final day of daily meal delivery, and they were actually handing out a week's worth of lunches. And you know, there was concern about that having to stop or slow. And so the community really came together to help bring this back on a slightly smaller scale. The issue was really, as you said, there was a school employee who tested positive for COVID-19. And the state also passed emergency leave for employees who fit certain categories, including anyone who is caring for their own child or an elderly parent, perhaps, or anyone who has underlying conditions. And it just got to a point where there were so many school workers, cafeteria workers, and bus drivers who said, yes, I want to be able to take that leave and be home at this time, that they weren't able to keep the meal service sustainable with school employees alone. So now there's going to be delivery 2 days a week at some sites and another 2 days a week at other sites to give families and kids who rely on these meals food to sustain them. And it's also going to be a partnership that helps put some restaurant workers to work too.
Well, yeah, it's this tension that's playing out everywhere between being able to provide services, but also keep those who provide the services safe. And that's been a reason why we've moved to remote instruction. And you've been really looking at what this move to remote instruction has looked like for students from a variety of locations in the state. And it's not just an affordability issue. So we have issues about, you know, being able to access meals, but there's also this question of the homework gap and people who are now at home and actually really struggling to be able to keep up with their schoolwork because they don't have reliable internet. So tell me about internet connectivity and what you've been looking into.
The homework gap is a phrase in the education world. Also, digital divide is another way we say it, for the difference between students who have reliable high-speed internet at home and those who don't. And I talked to a college sophomore from NC State who, when the university sent students home, he went to his family's turkey farm in rural Piney Grove, North Carolina. And he's there with his two younger sisters who are in high school and middle school, and they are all trying to do 100% of their schoolwork online. And they don't have broadband at their house. And what really struck me is it wasn't just that they couldn't afford what might be a typical monthly internet bill, but rather that broadband companies are saying they can't afford to install broadband where he lives. And he gave this description of where he lives, that it's really not as rural as you might imagine. So here's Ty Meyer from NC State.
They say it's not profitable. I guess even though I live on a 5-mile completely paved road that is literally only two turns right off I-40, but they say it's still too rural where not enough people would be able to use it in our area for them to put in a broadband internet.
That was NC State sophomore Ty Meyer. I'm speaking with Liz Schlemmer. So when we talk about not having access to broadband for an NC State student who's trying to do his homework, what does that look like in terms of kind of the amount of time it takes him to do his work as compared to other students? Do you have any examples of, you know, upload speeds or download speeds or what the kind of practical implications?
Yeah, one of his college assignments is that he has to upload a video of himself, just a short 2-minute video. And he was trying to do that at home off of their hotspot. Their hotspot gets good high-speed internet for a few days out of the month until they reach their monthly limit. And then it slows to almost a grinding halt. You can't upload, you can't download, you can't stream. And so just to turn in that assignment, he has been driving to parking lots, either at his local McDonald's or his local library, and he'll sit there and slowly upload his video that it takes his friends only a couple of minutes to finish that assignment.
And there's a cost that he has to incur, right, for kind of paying for the hotspot and paying for all of the data that he needs to use to be able to upload and download things.
I was absolutely floored by the cost. I talked to him yesterday again. We went over the numbers. And so they get this hotspot on their phone plan. You know, they pay $200-some for their phone plan. It includes 15 gigabytes on this hotspot. That only lasts them a few days. Mm. And if they wanted to buy more, they could pay $35 for every 5 gigs. So that amounts to, they could pay up to $700 for 100 gigabytes that would last them a week or two.
Wow.
In comparison, I pay $70 for a terabyte a month. I'm literally paying, or they are literally paying, 100 times more per gigabyte for high-speed internet from their hotspot than I do for my broadband in a city.
Wow. And as you said, I mean, he's right off of 40. He's not even, you know, in the most remote area, but it's really a lack of infrastructure that prevents him from being able to access it. I want to move on now to talk a little bit about your reporting into the UNC system and how it has been changing and adapting in the wake of all of this. And it has recently announced some budget cuts that are going to impact how things shake out in the next year. So tell me about what they have decided to do.
So each year, the UNC system makes a budget ask of the General Assembly. You know, they have a base budget of $2.9 billion. And then on top of that, each year, they're asking for specific things that they want to grow the university system, new initiatives, construction on campus, and opening up new programs. And what the Budget Committee of the Board of Governors has done, they know that they have to tighten their belt. They were told by the General Assembly that they needed to figure out, you know, all state agencies needed to figure out how to tighten their belts this year because we expect state tax revenue to be down. And so they took a look at their list of budget priorities and they started making cuts. And what we're going to see system-wide essentially is a freeze on new construction. So new buildings, new research centers that we're going to open up, that's all going to be postponed this year. They also made some cuts to their requests for additional operating expenses. So some programs are going to be postponed right now. They ended up cutting about $300 million from their annual budget ask, which is, you know, a tenth of their overall base budget.
Wow. I only have about 30 seconds left, but I want you to fill us in on a piece of news that's actually last week's news, but in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic, a lot of things get lost in the shuffle, and that is about the latest on Silent Sam. There was a ruling by a judge that kind of gives us another tick in that story. So tell me briefly.
Right. So on the last day in court, when Judge Bedour threw out that settlement, he said that he also wanted an accounting of how much was spent from the $2.5 million trust fund that the university system gave to the Sons of Confederate Veterans. And they turned in that accounting, and it showed they had spent about $82,000 on legal fees and paying the trust fund manager. And the judge ruled that those were reasonable expenses. So that is money that is not going to go back to the UNC system and ultimately back to UNC Chapel Hill.
So most of a $2.5 million fund that was set up to maintain Silent Sam has been returned to UNC, kind of the latest step in the dismantling of that deal. I'm talking with Liz Schlemmer. She's WNC's education reporter. Liz, thanks so much.
Thank you, Anita.
Just ahead, we will talk about how the pandemic is changing the way we are experiencing physical touch. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.